Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about the world of finance, both myself and my co-host here, both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself. Come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And glad you are here with us today as we talk about financial matters and
try to help people with their
making wise choices with their finances.
Maybe a little bit more peace in their life regarding money.
Yeah. And boy, I tell you, January started off a strong month for the stock market.
So wow.
I think some of the concerns that people had going into the holidays dissipated some.
Well, yes. But it
for
is.
Now.
Yeah. It's an interesting environment. Do you not? Do you think it is? I think it is.
It's always interesting. And it always looks a little different.
Yes.
Every cycle looks a little different.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's always different political issues, global issues, economic issues, different technology.
Yeah. Different trade wars, different embargoes, different sanctions, different.
But if you find yourself saving for retirement, nearing retirement, someone who's taken responsibility of your finances and done a good job saving, it doesn't mean you need to pay attention to all the noise and translate that what's that going to mean for your daily existence.
Well,
and I think that's the challenge people have.
If you could transplant, if you could translate into your daily existence. So,
well, you could, because you can say, oh my gosh, my portfolio's down. This is what that's going to mean. We got to cancel that trip. We can't go see the grandkids. Or, wow, look how much my portfolio is up. Maybe I should be buying that new car that I've been thinking about.
So, Scott, I was meeting with
both are bad ideas.
I was meeting with some longtime clients the other day. I think they've been clients for 20 or 25 years, right? Longtime clients. And they own a lot of residential real estate. And so they were talking about how their residential real estate doesn't ever seem to go up and down in price like their portfolio. And I said, oh, I beg to differ. Absolutely, it goes up and down in price. There's just no one sending you a statement once a month or going online once a month to look at the value
yes.
of that. So it has the same fluctuations, but just because you're blind to the fluctuations, you don't believe it actually exists.
And there are some benefits to that, though. I mean, from a behavioral finance standpoint.
Exactly. That's why, and they love real estate, and they kind of like investments, but they don't like
after
it moving 20, up.
They've been with you 25 years.
25 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Which isn't, by the way, disclaimer for compliance, which isn't to imply that all clients stay with us for 25
that's
years.
Right. Nor have all of our clients been with us for 25
that's
years.
That's correct. Now we've got the compliance stuff out of the way because we're in a highly regulated industry.
That's pretty funny.
Which is, quite frankly.
But I think for most investors, they need to find a way to separate themselves emotionally from those statements. And it's all on our phones now, for crying out loud, right? I mean, this right in my first page is a little stock thing. You can enter your mutual fund symbols, your ETFs, your stocks, and every day you can watch it if you'd like. And you can be able to, very simple to have a portfolio, which you could have an alert send you each day, what your account's worth, how much you made or lost. You log on. Here's how much you made yesterday, how much you lost yesterday.
Yeah. It's not healthy.
It's not going to help you with and the fact is, I just looked the other day, and forgive me, I forget the exact date of the 20-year period, but the last 20 years, the broad stock market, as measured by the S&P 500, was up just shy of 8%. Not a great 20-year record.
No,
because we had the dot-com, and we had the Great Recession. The last decade have been great since the Great Recession, been phenomenal. But
oh,
actually
incredible.
Back. But still, even if you look at, let's call it an 8% return, through all those downturns, in order to have that, you had to stay invested through the
all
ups
of it.
And downs. But I think most people say 8% is not bad. Even a real estate investor, you have a portfolio that you don't have to think about.
Yes.
You never have a tenant issue or a repair issue.
The portfolio never has a leaky toilet.
And I suppose you could go on to, say, Zillow on a daily basis. I don't know how often they update their algorithms to come up with whatever prices they are. But
or how accurate they are.
And I think most people going into retirement would prefer some diversification in their portfolio.
These people have. I mean, that was all part of it.
Yeah. Well, good for them. Yeah. Anyway. We're glad you are here with us on Hanson McLean's Money Matters. If you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. Again, that's 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's start off from the calls. Let's start in Granite Bay, California with JR. JR, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Well, I am a historically common but increasingly unusual anomaly. I spent 36
Wait,
years in the company.
JR?
I feel like I'm reading, I'm about to read a novel here.
Start over.
You're not.
Start over and say that again for us, please.
I just said I was a historically common but increasingly unusual anomaly.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Does that mean named JR living in the foothills of the Sierras?
No.
Okay.
No, I spent 36 years with the company. I'm 59 and a half years old. I retired about 60 days ago. Held off for the
congrats.
Held off for the 59 deal. I have taken a joint survivor pension for my life and my wife's life. My wife works. Quickly though, getting to the question, I'll outline a couple of the things that will probably help you. But my aged mother, she's 92 years old, is worth a few bucks. There are six of us, so it'll be divided lots of ways. But I expect to come into around $200,000 in cash and another $400,000 in farm value. This is all in trust, so it's pretty protected tax-wise. My question really is, I have a $435,000 mortgage on my home. It's currently at 4%. I do carry $450,000 in life insurance. So does my wife. My wife's still working. Makes about 150 plus.
We encourage that to keep working. That's perfect. There's your retirement.
Yeah, another 100
right
years or so. You know. So we have a couple of 401ks around 800,000 apiece. I do have some of your favorite annuities. No, they're not fixed, but I have about 400,000 annuities, another couple hundred thousand in personal cash. And my wife has a similar situation, as far, other than that cash I mentioned is joint, of course.
So how much did you say you had in annuities? 400,000?
Yeah, about 400.
And are they non-qualified annuities? That means they're outside of an IRA or any other?
That's correct.
And what's your pension?
What do you mean?
How much? What's the amount?
Oh, about 75,000.
Okay.
And does your wife have a full survivor on that so that if you pass away, she'll receive 75,000?
100%.
What's your basis in those annuities?
My basis is probably in the high twos.
Okay.
I've had it for a while.
So, well, first of all, you've done a great job. I mean,
great
you've got
saver.
Some good, yeah.
Great saver.
I mean, as far as planning for retirement, you sound like you're in the perfect situation. So what's your question for us?
So my question is, I'm expecting to come into, I'm trying to figure out, I don't have the cash to pay off the house, $435,000. I don't have the cash. The payment is not a problem. I don't expect it to become a problem. Okay. But I'm trying to think of this $200,000 that I expect to come into in the next, 5 days to 2 years with my mother.
Oh, did she pass away?
No, she's not even ill presently. But I'm just trying to plan for the future and see what makes sense with this paying off the house. What should I be doing to try to pay it off? Should I bother? That's my question.
Okay, so let's kind of walk through it. Let's start with
what's the home worth?
About $1 million.
Okay, so let's assume that you had this $600,000 in hand today, right? Which would be the $400,000 in inheritance, what you said was land, and $200,000 in cash. We're going to call it $600,000. Okay. If you used that to pay down the mortgage, you have taken what is called separate property. That's your property, not the property of the marriage, and commingled it with your spouse to make it community property. So if there is ever a dissolution of a marriage in the future, big words for divorce, in the future, your wife would possibly have claim to those dollars.
I would be inheriting it as a married person anyway, though, wouldn't that?
It doesn't matter.
That automatically make it joint?
Nope.
Nope.
Nope. So anything.
This is always a thorny issue that you always like to bring up, Pat.
Only because well, I've seen it.
Well, you know, grain divorce is on the. I mean, it's about double what it was 30 years ago. People at this stage in life getting divorced.
I've seen it.
Divorce is always bad, but it's
And it's so much easier to have this conversation with just one party on the phone versus the husband and wife, Scott. So,
I'll tell you this: in my first marriage, it so far has gone 32 years.
Got it. Okay. So all things being equal, you would probably use if you decided to commingle those assets, you would probably use those to pay down the house. Just for a matter of. You have $200,000 in cash right now, you said. I assume it's sitting in a bank or a CD or something along those lines, correct?
Well, I'm slightly inaccurate. $76,000 of that is in a kind of play stock fund. $130,000.
Let me ask you this.
$130,000, I can write a check.
Do either you or your wife have a strong desire to have that mortgage paid off? Do you feel like somewhat less secure or less prepared for this stage in life because of the mortgage?
I don't feel unprepared because I think our assets are sufficient. But at the same time, I like the idea emotionally of not having a mortgage payment.
So one of the things you can do is you have approximately $125,000 in cash. You can take that, pay it down up against the mortgage today and ask the mortgage company to re-amortize the loan.
Yeah, look into that. Sometimes they'll allow that once during the life of the loan. Some they won't allow at all. Some they'll allow it more than once.
And all you're doing is lowering your monthly payments. So you've got money earning probably, if it's in cash, less than 1%, and you're paying out 4%. So think about that.
Yeah, so that math doesn't work.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Okay. So just having that 3% spread on $125,000 is costing you $3,750 a year in interest costs that you don't really need to pay. Right?
Okay.
And let's assume you borrow the money from the same bank you actually deposited the money in. There's a picture of you in the corporate office that everyone kind of salutes as they walk by. And thank you.
Yeah.
They're like, thank you, JR. So that's just kind of a no-brainer if they allow you to reamortize it. If they don't allow you to reamortize it, then you might do it anyway and keep the payments the same, and then you're just going to accelerate the pay down of the loan. Then the second thing I would look at is I wouldn't take money from the 401ks to accelerate the payments, especially since your wife is working at this point in time and the high income that you're earning between the two of you. But if you inherit the money in the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, you very well may make sense to take those dollars and pay down the mortgage.
I think, particularly the day your wife quits working, because that's pretty substantial income. That would be a good time to figure out a way to get the mortgage paid off.
Yeah,
or if not, can we have one account pay that mortgage payment?
Yeah, just so that you're matching maturities.
Yeah, basically. So let's say she came home and said, hey, guess what, JR? I've been watching you the last 60 days. I think this retirement thing's great. I quit my job today. And you're like, oh, crap, how are we going to make the mortgage payment? We might say,
that'll be right after I get out the weapons.
Right, okay.
That's so, also the, how did you start the, something that used to be quite common, but today is an anomaly.
Yes.
Then you might say, all right, let's have the mortgage payment, let's have a withdrawal coming from the 401k or something along those lines to make that mortgage payment just so you don't have that stress. But you still have Social Security coming up in the next several years, too.
It's almost a no-brainer to pay down, take all the cash you have in the bank account, pay it down.
Whatever you don't think you're going to need the next year.
But he's got all the money in the IRAs and 401ks, and he's 59.
Yeah, but I mean,
if
let's say he's going to plan on buying a car in the next year, or has one of his daughters going to get married. Yeah, thank you.
All right, Scott. You're right. I know you love hearing that.
No, I'm just bringing it up. So, hey, appreciate the call, JR.
Take care. And congrats on the retirement.
I have to ask you one more quick thing, and that's my wife wants to know if she can count on your support for me getting a job, because she keeps telling people I'm between jobs and that I need to cover the country club expense on my own.
Got it. So, you know, it's interesting. Here's how you'll know whether you're not going to get a job in the future. Let's say you and your wife are going to go on, on a trip to Chicago. If you call it a vacation, it means in your mind you're still working. If you call it a trip, you're retired. Because retired people don't take vacation, they take trips. Working people
Nor do they go to Chicago in the middle of winter.
It's a hypothetical, Scott.
That's what a worker does.
Let's call it Hawaii.
Okay.
I'm going to take a trip then to the golf course later today.
There we go. All have right. a good time.
See you, JR.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Congrats on your retirement. And boy, you look at.
You know, Scott, I just, when he says he's going to go golfing later on today, I'd rather work than golf. I mean, I would rather come to the office and work than I would golf.
That's why you work.
That's a good point. But it just, everyone's view of what's entertaining and fun is different.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's right. And I think that we talk about here a lot of Hans McClain is being in a position so that if you want to retire, you can retire. If your job's at a point where you're not really enjoying yourself, you can do something different. Just giving yourself some more freedom and flexibility. And we think that's a worthy goal to get to financially.
Yes, that you have the option.
Correct. Work's an option and not an obligation. Yeah. 1-888-2-HANSON if you'd like to join the program here. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Joe in Northern California. Joe, you're with Hanson McClain.
Hey, how's it going?
Super.
What can we do for you?
I've gotten no savings for retirement. I'm 37 years old.
37 or 47? How many seven?
37.
Okay.
37. So my wife's 35. We both work. We make probably around 200,000 combined.
What were you making 5 years ago?
5 years ago, I was in college.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now that we're family started, we got another kid on the way. So we're going to try to plan for, you know, having money for that, but that's not an issue. But for retirement, 401k, there's no match, I don't think, for my wife, but for myself, it's only $1,500 a year because they are an ESOP company. So there's employee-owned stock. Just wondering
you
what
get,
I
do. You participate in the 401k? Do you participate much in that ESOP?
Yeah, I will be once I'm, invested, I guess.
Vested.
So once you're vested. Doing it for sure.
Here's what I would suggest, a rule of thumb, mid-30s like this. And the reason I asked how long you've been making this money, because if you said, oh, we've both had high income for the last decade, you don't have anything saved, and think, we got a problem. But instead, you went back and said, I'm going to focus on my best investment, which is yourself and your career.
That's your, in most situations, that's where of people are going to get their highest rate of return.
Yes, in themselves, which is what you did, right? Now you're back working. Yep. You've got a great income between the two of you. I would have if you could save 15% towards retirement, I would say 15%, unless you want to retire at, say, 50, I think it'd be a great place to start. And
so that means
30 grand a year
in both plans. You use both your wife probably to the maximum, pretty close to the maximum, and yours to the maximum.
Okay. So if they only match up to 1,500, is it best to still put it into 401k, or is there another option I should do?
Here's what I like about the 401k. Right now you are actually federal taxes, you're in the 23% bracket, but you're right pushing up into the next one. California, for the benefit of living in California, you're at, 9.3% of income taxes. So you're in a pretty high tax rate. I like the 401k for the tax benefits it has.
And it comes out of your paycheck. And so what happens? You know, people talk about the match. The match, right? The match. Every employer has a different match.
Some have none.
Yeah, and the match is icing on the cake. The 401k is designed to come out of your paycheck pre-tax, unless it's a Roth 401k, comes out pre-tax. It's saved on an automatic basis, and you want to be as aggressive with this portfolio as you possibly can, which means 100% of the dollars will go into stocks. And you don't care what it does on a day-to-day, week-to-week, year-to-year basis. You're interested in how much money you're going to have by the age of 60 or 65. So you want to put both to the maximum and both equities, all stock, in both you and your wife, and don't pay any attention to it. Do not pay any attention to it. And then the next 20 years, you'll find that, much like the call we had before, this gentleman had $800,000 in his 401k, and his wife had $800,000 in her 401k. And I can assure you, they were just consistent savers over time with probably a relatively aggressive portfolio, and that's how they got to $1.6 million between them. And they were 59. He was 59, and he said his wife was 4 or 5 years younger. So that's what you want to do. And okay. Don't worry about the match. If they get a match, that's a bonus.
15%? Sorry, 15% total for both of us?
No,
together,
no, 15% of your total pay, which is 15% for you and 15% for your wife, which is 15% of total pay. Okay. It's not 30%, it's 15%.
Gotcha.
And I would do the 401k for sure. Now, we at some point in time, we could say, let's look at Roth, let's look at 529 plans for the kids. But it sounds like you've just got out of school a few years ago, career's going well, making some money. Like, uh-oh, I better be responsible here.
And there will always be—
And just starting a family. It sounds like you're in a great situation.
You make good income. There will always be competing needs for those dollars that are going to go in the 401k. There's going to be lacrosse practice, lacrosse shoes. There's going to be a trip to Disneyland. There's going to be an RV that probably gets in the way. Always. Always competing interest. And your 401k will never say, hey, don't forget me.
Nope.
But your kids will say, hey.
We have the cheer competitions in Disney World, Dad.
We've got to go. And now my friends are staying for the whole week. Which, by the way, I'd pay not to go to Disneyland.
I don't think it's a father's choice, is it? I shouldn't say that.
Well,
I don't want to get myself in trouble.
There we go. But that's our advice.
Good luck and congrats on the new baby on the way too.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right, great. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
My baby's leaving the house this year. My last one.
Are you sure?
Theoretically, he's going to go away to college. Nice kid, but he's a nice kid. He's a nice kid. He is. I'm going to miss him. But it's kind of this is a big, I've had kids at home for 25 years, right? And all of a sudden, my wife and I are like, wow, what's your name? And then we fight over who gets to watch Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy.
Well, Pat, there are interesting stages in life. And most of the people that we work with, the most people that are listeners to this program, have gone through that stage. And the next stage is really like the caller we had earlier on the program, where recently retired, one still employed. Oftentimes, people don't retire at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Most people are married, going into retirement, so... And oftentimes they don't retire at the same point in time. But when they both retire, it's usually quite an adjustment.
Yes. Yes.
Because, and sometimes, particularly if one is kind of a driver, maybe more kind of a manager at work or a project leader, and they come home and it's like, hey, I'm going to start leading your project now.
Correct.
You are my project.
I'm going to show you how to... Like a retired engineer, which my uncle was, I remember my aunt saying, oh, yeah, the first 2 weeks he was retired, he came home and rearranged the spice cabinet and showed me how to run the wash machine. And I thought, oh, my, this isn't going to – but he got over it, right? But everyone goes through these stages. Anyway, so I was just sharing with you. It's my son, he said to me, you know, we should spend some more time together, Dad. Do you want to go bike riding or – So he said, I thought that was very nice. I said, not a chance.
I'm busy. I am working, son. I'm a responsible businessman.
Yes. No, anyway. So we tuned up.
My son has been home an extended break for college.
How's that? And how old is he?
He's just turned 21.
And how is it having him home?
And we were at dinner on the other night, Thursday night, and he ordered a beer and he forgot his ID.
Uh-huh.
And my mom. So bad slip. My wife says, I'll vouch for his age. And I'm thinking, I guess my wife looks awfully believable.
They
served him a beer. Mm. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing that I'm drinking beer with my son, but that's...
Well, it's the stage in life.
I always joke with my kids. I say, my next life, I'm coming back with my own child.
Oh, yeah. So. I'd like to come back as your child, too. Quite frankly.
I was going through college. I went to junior college for 4 years because I was working full time, and actually I had a little tree trimming business that I purchased with no cash. Figured out how to make some money, and then sold it for cash. Was able to go away to school my final 2 years in undergrad. But I remember when there is no financial backing of any cushion of any sort whatsoever. It's like you figure it out. I mean, I graduated the day after I graduated. I'm working full time.
That's
my son told me he's going to take 4 years after graduation And he's going to be wants to be a Backroads leader, leading trips around the world, camping and stuff.
And will you support him at that point in time financially?
I told him, as long as you're self-supportive financially, is what I told him.
Did you just like, mostly?
Mostly. As long as he's making good choices.
Mostly.
He says 4 years of that and being a ski instructor is what he wants to do, and paraglide. He's gotten into paraglide. And I said, then he said, then I'll get serious about my career.
Well, good for him. I mean, everyone writes their own story,
yeah.
Right?
And I think, I said, and I'm thinking to myself, your career is probably going to be in the stuff you're passionate about today, my guess.
Yeah, he's
going to. I
wouldn't
be surprised if.
Like he's running back roads in 20 years.
He's
or,
leading, last summer he led cycling trips
see,
with kids.
What?
All summer.
I mean, it's that intersection of passion.
I don't know where he gets that.
It's the intersection of passion and what the market's willing to pay for, right?
Yeah, it kind of is, yeah. Well, that's why, don't forget what the market is willing to pay for.
What the market's willing to pay for.
Otherwise, it's just a hobby.
Correct.
Yeah. So follow your passion and your dreams as long as you can figure out how to get paid doing it. Anyway, we're taking a quick break. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. We'll be right back.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are sticking around as we're talking about financial matters. If you want to be part of our program, got a question for us, love to take your call. 1-888-2-HANSON. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. Love to take your call, so join us, please.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you.
Yes.
Well, we think we'd like to talk to you. We're going to reserve that until we actually talk to you.
We do have some pre-screen.
Yes, that's true. Someone does answer the phone for us and
screens a bit, schedule it.
A little bit.
And while we might know the general topic of the call, we don't know the full details.
That is correct. Some of that's always a little mystery.
It's always a bit of a mystery. It makes it a little more exciting and interesting for us.
Someone asked you what?
I don't remember.
Oh, hey, so I wanted to talk about these. Article came out last week from your friends at Wells Fargo. Not just Wells Fargo Bank, this is Wells Fargo Advisors. So they being Wells Fargo, this is an article. Where did I read this?
In Investment News.
Investment News.
Because I have a copy of it in my hand.
It says, Wells Fargo Advisors is hitting, they use the word hitting, clients with a new annual fee on advisory accounts that is roughly 6 basis points. So what does 6 basis points mean? On $1 million account, it's approximately $600. This 6 basis points, this is actually $590 per $1 million of accounts, which is, it's a new fee. 6 basis points, by the way, would be considered a moderate increase in cost.
Yes.
Not
it's not. I don't think it's the fee, Pat, that you're frustrated as much. So that's this, just the headline.
This is what
you don't like.
This is what you dig into. This new fee applies to all advisory accounts. So that means if you have an account of stocks or bonds or mutual funds or whatever, your Wells Fargo, you may be hit with this fee. But these accounts could receive a rebate based on revenue sharing from mutual funds that could offset the new fee.
Revenue sharing from mutual funds.
What is that? So to the average consumer, what does revenue sharing mean?
Okay. I think a lot of us understand the supermarket model, for example. When you go into the supermarket and you see a whole end display of...
They call them end caps.
Of Coca-Cola, for example.
Correct.
Coca-Cola cut a deal with the supermarket and says, yeah, hey, here's the... We will pay you X dollars to allow us to display our soda front and center.
It's called it, oftentimes they use it in retail, is a shelving fee.
And there might be, maybe if you're a supermarket exec, so, well, it's not that exactly how that works. Well, maybe there's some other deal. But some deal.
But the point being is that the prime location, the prime spot in a retail environment is actually not equally distributed to all of the people that sell goods and inside your store, that sell retail goods. And it's the same in the in many parts of our industry.
Financial services industry. Yeah.
Not in our office.
That is correct. But we don't participate in revenue sharing.
We don't like revenue sharing because it clouds the advisor's view of the recommendations to the clients.
Here's the bottom line on this. If someone's portfolio are in these other mutual funds that have a revenue share with Wells Fargo, it means, number one, those mutual funds are going to be more expensive by their nature. Vanguard, as an example, does not do revenue share, yes, to my understanding.
Yeah, that was my understanding as well. They just don't play
some of their
game.
Fees. Some of their funds are less than 6 basis points total management fees.
So Wells Fargo is saying, we're going to charge you this $590 per $1 million unless we get this money from someone else through a different back channel.
In a back, essentially, a back. And a hidden fee. A fee you're not going to see disclosed in your statement.
These fees support services we provide, Wells Fargo provides, to maintain the platform for all advisory accounts, including technology and record-keeping services provided to mutual funds available on their advisory platform. Well, weren't they doing this before they started charging the $590 per million dollars? So why all of a sudden
they used to incentivize financial advisors directly by recommending one mutual fund family over another. Right.
And now
it's much more difficult.
And so partly because the mutual fund companies are being squeezed, yep, and they're not paying as much.
And now they're saying, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we just charge your client more, and your client's going to see it on a statement. Oh, but Mr. Advisor or Mrs. Advisor, if you don't want your client to pay that fee, just put them in these funds. But the reality is the client will end up paying more those funds.
Correct. So what confuses me about this is it's this continued in Wells Fargo defense, they're not the only ones that play this game. They are not the only ones.
There's a reason that Hanson McLean went independent many years ago, to avoid these conflicts.
Yes. And it's not just Hanson McLean.
No, there's a lot of other.
Yes, there's lots of investment RIAs.
Independent registered investment firms that do not accept revenue share from mutual funds.
But
flat out.
What kind of just kind of... You know, I thought was curious is why they launched this now for them.
I just read some article they're trying to restart again.
Yeah. So why couldn't you wait if you were in management? Not that I think it's good for anyone.
To your point, Pat, you're not trying to pick on Wells Fargo specifically. You're picking on the business model specifically.
Which is...
And that's why we encourage people to work with an independent financial advisor, certified financial planner an independent firm doesn't have that. Whether it's Hanson McLean or not, there's a number of firms like that.
The thing to remember is what scares people away from working with an independent financial advisory is oftentimes the size of the firm and they don't have big brand recognition.
Yeah, but for example, a firm like ours, most of our clients' assets or all of the clients' assets are held elsewhere, either at TD Ameritrade, Fidelity, Charles Schwab primarily, right? So large institutions where the assets, that's where the money's actually held. As an independent firm, we act as an advisor.
Which means we actually say what should be in the portfolio, when it should be in the portfolio, and how much should be
and
in the portfolio.
And unlike the structure that it was just that you just discussed, Pat, our compensation does not come from mutual funds.
It comes from the clients.
From the clients.
100% disclosed.
So we're on the same side of the table. We both want to share in what as much growth as possible.
Yes.
We want to have success there. Not
this nickel and diamond
hiding fees, which is essentially what that is.
Yeah.
Anyway, 1-888-2 Hanson.
And by the way, so these old wirehouses, which are now Bank of America and Wells Fargo, the number of advisors that are both men and women leaving those firms are at record highs.
Yes. Well, you can understand.
I could understand. What I don't understand was what took them so long, but I understand why they're leaving those firms.
Some of it's the compensation structure they have, the stock option structure they have.
Oh, why they stayed.
Yeah, there's too much. It's almost, I shouldn't call it indentured servitude. They've got golden handcuffs.
They've got lots of hooks in.
Yeah. Anyway, let's continue on with calls here. Let's talk to Jacinto in Parker, Colorado. Jacinto, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, sir. I got two and maybe three quick questions. We have an equity home equity loan. About 95% is for the siding and for a motorhome I bought. I want to know if it can be deducted.
What is the how much is the equity? How much money do you owe on the second?
For the motorhome is $60,000. It's only 120 something.
Okay. Altogether. And what's the interest rate on it?
I don't, about 4 or 5, something like
that. Okay. I'm going to call it 5%. All right. And so you want to know whether you can deduct that interest not.
So, and if not, is there another type of loan I can deduct without getting penalized?
So with the first of all, have you been itemizing your deductions up until now?
No, I've always done it. But they put that new law in, whatever.
But what's impacting you is not necessarily the new law, but just the fact that the IRS has a you can take either the higher of your own expenses, or to make things simpler, we'll just give you some standard deduction.
And the standard deduction is higher than what your itemized deduction would be. So the answer is there is no tax benefit to you whatsoever in having this loan.
Okay,
zero. You cannot deduct it. If you have the money, do you have the money in the bank that you could pay this loan off with?
Probably, yes.
How much money do you have in the bank approximately?
$300,000 or $400,000.
Is that right?
Yeah. Somewhere in there.
Are you spending any of that money on a regular basis?
That's a minimal that I have to take out.
The required minimum distributions. Do you have any of this money outside of an IRA? Do you have any cash outside of an individual retirement account?
Yes, we have some that we haven't. I guess they're.
How much?
I don't know. I'll say about 40,000.
Okay.
Something like that.
You might want to sit down with an advisor and figure out how quickly you should be taking the money out of the IRAs to pay down this loan, or whether you should be accelerating those distributions from the IRAs to pay down this loan. Because if your cost of money is 5% and your IRA is earning less than 5% because of its investment mix, you may have a benefit of actually accelerating the distributions from the IRA above and beyond your required minimum distribution to pay down the loan. And that's an analysis that a good advisor would walk you through. All righty?
Yes. That's okay. I thank you very much, sir. You answered my question.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. And it's, if we look at percentage of people who file their standard and itemized deductions, they're estimating it's going to be like 10% or less.
I read less than 10%. And most people would do the standard deduction.
The standard, so for two reasons on that. One, our state and local taxes are limited to $10,000 a year.
The SALT taxes.
So you live in a high tax state, you've bought your house in the last few years, so you don't have the benefit of some tax base that's been there forever. You might have been paying $15,000 a year in state and local taxes. Plus, you might have had some interest and some charitable. So, but now the standard deduction for a married couple is $24,000. And for a single, it's $12,000, actually a tad higher for 2019. So with a limit of $10,000 on your state and local income taxes, that's $10,000. Now we're talking about you have another $14,000 that's going to come from primarily two areas.
From
interest and charitable giving.
In an individual, not a married couple.
Individual, $12,000 for single, $24,000 for a married couple.
Yes.
So if you've been paying a ton of state taxes and property taxes, good for you. You're limited to only $10,000.
So,
that's why so many people, even if they've maybe their home interest hasn't been that great, but they made charitable deductions, they may be precluded.
So this has changed the landscape. Our advisors are meeting with clients that are charitably inclined, and they're changing the way they give money to charities.
Or even one that maybe it made sense economically to hold a mortgage before no longer does.
Correct.
Because most people. The vast majority of people who have a mortgage are not getting a tax deduction for it. Because they're getting the tax deduction anyway.
So the idea, the old belief that, oh, I get an interest rate deduction is kind of, just throw it out.
Throw it out.
That idea.
Unless you have a huge mortgage and a huge income.
Yeah, throw that idea out. Yeah, there's almost, in almost every circumstance, for the average American, there's no benefit, tax
you
benefit
could even
of a
have
mortgage.
A huge income and take a standard deduction. Because yes, the limitations because on the state this, and local income
Yeah, the $10,000. And it certainly changes how people give to charities. So I was talking to a client the other day, give charity every year. I was like, you know, we might change this. You might be given to this charity every 3 years now or 4 years, and this is how we're going to work with this.
Yeah, or let's every 3 or 4 years put it in a donor advice fund,
and then
which is almost like a mini private foundation. And then you could, it could be a large one too for that matter, and you could dole it out over the next few years so that the charity – Most particularly small charities, people wouldn't think that they're going to be wise enough to say, "I'm going to withhold 2/3 of the money and spread it out over the next 2 years." It's all going to be spent, right?
So that's correct. Yeah. So anyway, it just changes. And so his question, Jacinto's question was a question many people are asking themselves.
If you were arguing in the past, you said, "Well, I like having my mortgage because I've got the double whammy is." Let's say you have a couple $100,000, let's say it's a $500,000 mortgage and you're paying 4%. That's $20,000 a year in interest charges. But if you're earning 2% in the bank, that what you're earning in the bank is fully taxable to you. There's no like standard exemption amount before you have to declare interest.
That's a good point.
Zero standard exemption amount. Yeah. Which we got a $24,000.
Which, if you're a listener of this show, you know how much we like people to pay off their mortgage prior to retirement. This even bolsters that argument even further.
And some might be like, well, Pat, I was able to take advantage of itemizing because I had $25,000 of expenses.
It's not, but it's only $1,000 over.
So that's why it does take some more planning now. And a good advisor, frankly, if you have a financial advisor that's managing your money, they should be having these conversations with you as well. Yeah. They should be having conversations about what other debt you have? Does it make sense to pay off that debt? They should have conversations on: Have you been doing anything? You know, do we need to talk about some charitable giving you might have done or thinking about doing? And best way to structure that from a financial standpoint.
They're encouraging you to get a will or a trust if you need one.
They also should be talking about things such as: Do you have an aging parent that might require some financial resources of yours in the next coming years? We need to be planning for.
Do you have kids that are never going to leave the house
or moved back? Life's getting pretty complicated. A good financial advisor,
you know,
one who will talk through all
this. You know what, Scott? That's been is this opioid epidemic? No, I'm just telling you. How many clients do we have as a firm?
6,000 households.
We're seeing it.
Oh yeah,
we see it. Not in our clients, but in our clients' children, and the planning that goes around. Normal. Perfect, well-balanced families, 3 or 4 kids, one of them completely off the rails. It takes estate planning. It changes the estate planning equation.
Lots of equations.
Lots of. Yeah. It's a shame. Actually, it's heartbreaking.
Yes. But it is certain kind of planning, and that's also the kind of thing you should be having a conversation with your financial advisor. As painful as that might be, the more open and honest and transparent you can be with your financial advisor, assuming you've got
a competent
advisor, the better the planning they're going to be able to do for you. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Sacramento with Marissa. Marissa, you're with Hanson McLean. Hello, Marissa. Hello? You're with Hanson McLean.
Hello.
Hi, Marissa.
Hello.
You are with Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had a question. We're trying to figure out our best plan for moving forward with my husband retiring in October of this year, and he'll have a pension. We have been talking to someone, a financial advisor, that's suggesting a whole life contract. To basically be a source of income in retirement.
In case your husband predeceases you, to provide a stream of income until your dying day? Is that how it's being pitched to you?
Well, no, not necessarily. More of that, it is a the 72T, basically a tax exemption, because life insurance is not reportable to the IRS. And basically, he's saying to fund the life insurance policy through, you know, take what we have. I have a an IRA and a Roth and a 457B and a 401K.
Let's back up, Marissa. So in your retirement accounts, the IRA, the Roth, 401K, how, if I add those together, what's the ballpark balance of that?
IRA's about 270. The 457 is about 140.
Okay.
And the Roth is at 40K.
All right, $450,000.
And your husband's going to have a pension when he retires, correct?
Yes.
And have you looked at which single life or joint survivor?
What do you mean, single life?
Well, when your husband goes to receive this pension, he will be given, is he retiring from a state or county or municipality by chance?
Police.
Okay. Yeah. So he's retiring from a municipality. And the reason we knew that is because he had a 457. So that was what led to that question.
And is he age 50-ish?
Okay, that's why they're that's why this person is recommending the 72T. So this guy, whoever or lady that was recommending this life insurance to you, threw a whole bunch of stuff at you. Your husband, when he goes to retire, will be given a menu of choices.
And does he have, how many years do he have, 25 years plus?
Yeah, he'll have 20, almost 20.
So his,
basically 27.
When he retires, his take-home pay will probably be larger than what his take-home pay is today.
Because he's going to retire at approximately 81% of his final salary, just based on the little information you've given us.
And he won't
so
be paying into his pension, and he won't be paying into his retirement savings anymore.
So his approximate income will be the same on a single-life-only pension. And a single-life-only will pay him for the rest of his life, and if he dies, it will cease at that point in time. But he is going to be given a menu of choices, approximately 8 choices to choose from, where he can take 75% of his single life only. And if he predeceases you, it will pay out the same amount to you that was paying to him. And then every flavor.
That's probably the option.
Yes.
We would Thank you.
Yeah, yes.
Thank you.
Every once in a while, we see an insurance agent tell someone, take a single life options, one that ceases upon the person's death, and buy life insurance to replace that. That strategy, I've yet to see it work well.
I've only seen it fail. Only seen it fail.
Me too.
So that is the strategy you want to take. You want to take that a single life only, you want to take the joint survivor for you. I think that's a good call.
I would leave the 457 right where it is.
Wouldn't touch it. And the reason you want to leave that 457 exactly where it's at is because there's no restrictions on getting to those dollars from a penalty standpoint once your husband separates from service. So you're thinking, well, why is it just the 457 that I could get money at? I could get at that money without penalty. It's just the rules. It's a deferred compensation plan. It's not actually considered a qualified retirement plan. So the rules are different for that. The rest of the money you may consider leaving where it is, or you may consider.
You don't have to make a choice right away.
Or you may consider rolling it over into an IRA. What this life insurance salesman wanted you to do is take all this money and roll it over into an IRA and then start what's called a series of substantially equal payments based on an assumed rate of return and your life expectancy under IRS code 72T.
To fund a life
insurance? To fund a life insurance policy.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what. So from the little bit you've given us, that is what I suspect is going to happen. You want nothing to do with this. You want, I don't care if this person selling you this is your brother. Have nothing to do with them. It is absolute garbage.
Here's what worked out phenomenal for you. Here's the great situation you're in. Your husband served as a police officer for 27
years.
27 years. And all that entails. One of the benefits of that is that you can retire young and with a great pension. So from a financial standpoint, you guys are in a phenomenal situation because essentially he no longer has to show up for work and gets the same paycheck. So,
and it's highly probable that he's going to return to some sort of employment.
Yes.
Highly probable.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it happens most of the time.
Because it happens almost all of the time.
And if they don't, then sometimes it's not the healthiest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You probably have friends that have retired early that didn't go back to work, and it isn't always a great idea. So he plans on going back to work. You have this life insurance that they're pitching you?
It would increase your taxes in the upcoming years because you're taking money out of their plans.
Especially if he's going back to work. He's got income coming from his pension.
What do you need? You don't need whole life insurance.
It's not him. It's not they need it. The guy selling it needs them to buy it.
No, he's saying that it's basically tax exempt because it's not reportable to the IRS. So when you basically pay your taxes now because, you know, money's at a discount.
He's right? just making words
oh
up.
Oh, my gosh, Marissa.
He's just Marissa.
Honestly. Okay. And listen, both when we started in the industry, Pat and myself both started at a life insurance company. There were good people there, but we didn't last long, primarily because regardless of a financial problem, the answer was always life insurance. And we said, look, there's a time when life insurance is necessary. We're big fans of term life insurance. When it comes to whole life and universal life, look, not only have we started in the industry, we also, both of us have what's called the Chartered Financial Consultant Designations, which is three additional courses on just how insurance contracts work. So we understand this. Oftentimes, you have somebody, they work in an insurance industry, they don't understand the rest of the world. Their whole life is going to work when they talk about how wonderful life insurance is. Life insurance, the answer. They're talking about how these techniques, how to sell. They go out and they present these concepts. They probably have a name for this concept.
Marissa, thank you for listening to Mr. Hansen's rant. You have no need for this stuff at all. Zero.
Zero.
Not even a little. And I understand what they're saying, which is you can
borrow. We know how they work.
You can borrow the money out.
There's lots of products that do that without it. Unless you love writing insurance checks for everything.
So
life is no different. And you're buying insurance.
This person's going to come back and say, these guys don't know what they're talking about.
Do.
They don't understand. I will debate anyone.
Ask what the commission would be to this person on the policies recommended. And we're out of time,
5%.
Unfortunately.
100%.
Huh?
5%.
Oh, 100% first year premium. Oh, 0.5%, but he's getting paid.
Lion.
Lion.
I wouldn't talk to him, even if it's your brother. Sorry.
Marissa.
Time to get a new family.
No,
we're out of time. This has been Hansen McLean's Money Matters. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hansen McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.